Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I thought the paramedic was the 14th baker. We saw so much of the paramedic, didn't we? Which is blood absolutely everywhere.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. This is very exciting to be here. We are back for another season, but we are going backwards in time, which is very exciting. We are going back to season four. We're starting off with Howard season four. Now, I'm not sure what season this is in the USA, but this is the season aired in 2013, which was 10 years ago. So how perfect for like the 10th anniversary that we're going to be doing our podcast. So I'm going to be your host today. I am Sarah, and obviously we have with us the lovely Dan, Jane, and of course, the man who was there at the time, Howard. Howard, how do you feel about going back over your old series? Is it weird to watch yourself on TV?
Oh, it's so weird, because obviously over time you collect these memories in your head, and then when you actually watch it on TV, you think, oh my goodness, I didn't realise it was like that. I've remembered it through rose-tinted glasses. And then I see this poor guy looking like a kind of rabbit caught in headlights, just wandering around with a bowl, not knowing what to do with it.
Do you have this whole fantasy where you won and then you watch it back and you're like, oh no, I didn't actually win? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Well, it's really lovely to watch it back. I remember watching this, obviously, before Baker the Legend and everything, so it's lovely to revisit it. Jane, what was it like re-watching things from earlier seasons?
I think we've probably mentioned this before, or somebody has, but all the bakers that went before us are the inspiration and the reason we applied for the show, really, because we loved it all so much. And there are superstars, there are heroes. And the people that came on after us, apologies, Dan, are like, yeah, well, they're all right. Sorry, everybody who's listening. But, you know, they were. The Howard, I remember Howard long before I ever met him, and he was just wonderful. And so it was a joy. It was like being wrapped in a big, old, nostalgic comfort blanket. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Very interesting to see how things have changed slightly. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But Howard looks wonderful. I think he looks even more wonderful now than he did then. And you certainly didn't look like a rabbit in the headlights. You were this consummate professional, Howard, even then. No, loved every minute of it.
Yeah, I'm curious, actually, Howard. When was the last time you watched this series before we just rewatched it now? How long ago?
Quite a few years ago. I did a Baked with Legend at home. And can't remember where it was, but someone had decided it was a good idea to have the series playing in the background whilst I was doing this class, and so distracting. But, yeah, so it's it's a few years since I saw it, but I was busy doing other things at the time, so I didn't have time to concentrate in the way that I have done over the last day or so.
Yeah, similar for me. I watched my series a few times in the year that it was on, and then haven't watched it for ages, so I'll be interested to go back and watch mine. It's interesting we talk about how much it changed. For me, the thing that changed the most is the feel. I mean, we'll get onto how they present everything, but just the feeling was so much more quaint and homely. It did feel like a smaller scale production. So I'm curious, between the times when you were on the Christmas special and your series, had it ramped up noticeably?
Yes, I think so. I think it definitely felt, by the time I did the Christmas special, that there was more interest. There was, you know, just the effort that was put into the production just seemed kind of higher, really, as well. So higher level.
So simpler times.
Yeah.
Ah, weren't they all back then, 10 years ago? Oh, goodness me. We're going to be getting very nostalgic on this podcast, I can tell. Let's start, as we always do, with the signature challenge. And we started off for Cake Week very simple with a sandwich cake. And now something I enjoyed is Mary at the beginning saying that she wanted to see something different than a typical Victoria sandwich. And of course, in true Bake Off style, what's the first thing we're shown is Glenn's typical Victoria sandwich. Classic editing there.
I thought it was a bloodletting cake challenge. Isn't that what it was? What was with that? I have to say, I remember one of the other seasons, somebody cut their fingers like 10 times. But how many people was it, Howard? You had a good slice, didn't you?
Oh, I did. I think the editing was slightly awry because I thought that I was the first one. But it looked as if I wasn't. But who knows? But yeah, they had warned us. It was a very, very cold day when we were filming, and they had warned us that we'd all got new sets of knives. And of course, at home, you get used to the knives that you use, and you do things with them that you probably shouldn't do with knives, but you're familiar with them. But there, oh, I was just cutting into a passion fruit, and I thought, I only nicked the thumb, but it was so sharp that I thought, oh, goodness, what have I done here?
I thought the paramedic was the 14th baker. We saw so much of the paramedic, didn't we? Which is blood absolutely everywhere.
So many people. Oh, I think it was easier to say who didn't get cut in that first weekend than who did. You know, all the blue plasters on everybody's fingers by the end of the episodes. Oh, goodness me. So a sandwich cake seems quite simple. What can go wrong with a sandwich cake?
I mean, listen, it's Bake Off, okay? So what happens is you get asked to make a sandwich cake and everybody's brains go mental and you start coming up with ridiculous ideas and things that you would never do normally. So lots of things can go wrong. I thought lots of people went simple, which I would have thought was the smart thing to do just to get a good tidy bake under your belt. But some people went crazy. There was this guy in there, I think his name was Harold. He made a rice flour cake. But Howard, what on earth persuaded you? I mean, your parents are gluten-free.
No,
What is the deal?
It was someone who I worked with who was celiac. And when I baked cakes to take into work, I did one cake, which was a lime and coconut cake. And people who I didn't know came up to me afterwards and said how delicious this cake was. So I thought, When I actually got the go-ahead that I was going into the tent, I thought I'll do a variation on that cake because it was so successful. And the producers the food producer was saying, oh, what a good idea to do a gluten-free cake. So I thought, all right, tick some boxes here. So, yeah, that's where it came from, just the fact that it had been successful to do a lime and coconut, and I thought, I'll vary this and do a passion fruit and coconut cake. Yeah.
Quite brave, I would say. Quite a brave choice because... Or was it the easy choice? Is that why you did it?
No, but it could have looked so beautiful because it was supposed to have sort of this lovely creamy coconut filling and sort of piped on top and some little shards of toasted coconut. And of course, because I'd cut my thumb, this cake was late going into the oven, and when it came out, putting the buttercream on, and it seeped all over.
Oh, but you didn't get any negative comments, did you?
Believe that.
Spot on, a very good cake, absolutely lovely perfect.
I only just arrived back in time for the judging. I ended up going to A&E to because
did you
hear? Yes, because
what?
Yeah, because it had got so bad, this cut, and that the medic couldn't deal with it, and sort of advised that I needed to go to A&E. So I remember walking back down the hill, and them filming me coming back from the hospital. I suppose just in case this was part of this story about someone who cuts his thumb in the first episode and then ends up winning Bake Off. Yeah, let's use that footage. But...
Yeah.
Well, this is something we have discussed just before we started recording. I think it's definitely something we need to bring up. How we didn't actually get to see too much of elements of people baking, like, you know, Howard's cut his thumb and then, oh, his filling's melted. And we're like, why? What happened? We didn't really get to see too much of some of the baking elements, which I think was maybe down to 13 bakers rather than 12, or I'm not quite sure why, but I was missing some of that information.
Did you notice where I was in the tent as well?
On like the naughty step at the front.
Yeah, because they couldn't get any more units in. I was actually in a unit in line with the judging table. But what they made me do was sit back against the counter behind me, which was Francis's, to avoid it looking as if I was too far forward in the tent. And when I went to take the bake up in the showstopper, I had to walk round so it didn't look as if I was coming from further back in the tent. It's so weird.
All the editing tricks. You hear it here first, guys.
But I would say I saw your painting, Howard, because it was just, I had no idea. Well, I know you're extremely talented, of course, but you were painting in the little clip of you at home or something.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely stunning. What a clever old thing you are. I mean, do you do this on... Forget the baking. We didn't see much of the cake, so we're going to talk about how it's painting. But do you still paint? Do you do it for pleasure? Do you sell them?
No, I don't. Well, I have sold them before. We once went on holiday, and I did some watercolours whilst we were on holiday, and the hotel that we were staying at were quite impressed. So I thought, oh, right, can kind of decrease the bar bill by selling a few of these. So yeah, I did sell a few paintings on holiday once, but that's
got to have a side hustle, haven't you? Yeah. One thing that I thought was really interesting is something that somebody said to me a while ago, and I sort of thought, is that really true? Someone said that sort of Frances changed the way that Bake Off is with all of her artistic vision. And I was like, is that true? I don't know. And then as I was watching this episode back, I was like, yeah, I see it, because Frances was one of the first ones who really focused on the art and the presentation, not necessarily above the baking, but everything had like a twist, had a theme, was... and because she's an artist, obviously we saw that she worked in designing children's clothes or something. But yeah, that was really interesting to me. Her jam sandwich I thought was interesting. It was a really fun twist. The cake was probably relatively basic. I don't know if she made her own fondant. You know, the presentation of it was fantastic. When I remembered someone had said that, I thought, yeah, that's Frances. Really had strong artistic vision. I thought her jam sandwich was great. It's probably not what I would have done. I probably would have done more just of a classic sandwich cake. But also, do you remember little Ali? Sweet and young he was.
Lovely.
Aww. I mean, he's a man now, but he's such a sweet little boy back there.
Well, Dan, actually going back to Francis's sandwich cake, that brings up a really good point. Jane, I'm sure I've heard you talk about when you were on Bake Off, or maybe it was well on the Christmas episode, of that you weren't allowed to bring in certain things, cake tins and cutters and things like that. The minute I saw Francis's gorgeous little sandwich cake tins, I thought, my immediate thought was, is this legal? So it's interesting. What were you told when you went into the tent versus Howard, what you guys were told?
Well, when we were in the tent, they were quite strict on what we could bring in. So if you could request them to get you any of the equipment that you wanted, but recommended that we brought our own cake tins in because we were used to baking with them, which is fair enough. But we had to send photos in to get them approved to make sure that, well, it's the BBC and they are very careful not to advertise anything. So you had to make sure that it was sort of quite generic. So you weren't sort of saying everybody go to Lakeland or something. To the extent that if we wanted to make a cutter, say for our biscuits, they almost had to be made at home. And we found a lot of our bakers were making things and bringing them in. So, yeah, I hadn't noticed the cake tin, her bread style cake tin. I don't think it was necessary, to be honest, because you didn't need it to make it look like a slice of bread, because just a square slice of cake, I think, would have done the trick when I saw it at the end. So I'm not quite sure. I mean, we thought we had to make our own fondant icing. We couldn't, you know, the roll-out fondant icing. We weren't allowed to use anything, any particular stamps or anything like that. And then when I went to the Christmas episode, well, we had two people from the Channel 4 series. So we had Liam and then Flo there, who were brilliant, really, really lovely to bake with. Then Andrew and I. Andrew and I were making all our own stuff, and they were using anything that they could lay their hands on from the shop. So I think it'd be interesting to know what the rules are now. But, you know, it completely didn't went over my head that she'd got a bread-shaped cake tin. So I don't know, to be honest. Maybe they changed it because few series later, I can't remember what her name was, she used some very distinctive cutters and it was criticised in the tent, and maybe they changed it after that. I don't know. Maybe they got stricter a little later. I really don't know.
I tell you what I care about more, which is the most signature thing that we have on Bake Off is contestants having a mental breakdown over cake. And I think, so Ruby was really, she really took the prize this episode for just absolutely bursting into tears at the first sign of struggle. So how did we feel about this, to go down in flames in week one, already crying into your cake batter?
Oh gosh, you go straight in there. Talk about sharp knives. Sharp knives in the first episode, Dan.
Did you ever break down in the tent? Or are you just not that kind of person? Did you ever have a cry in the tent, Jane?
Me?
Yeah.
No. I didn't ever cry.
She's hard as nails, our Jane.
Hard as nails. I came very close to it in botanical week, but we were all absolutely knackered from the shooting schedule. It had been pretty intense for reasons I'm not quite sure about. I think because the judges were busy doing something else. So it had been very, very intense shooting schedule, and we were really under pressure. And Paul was absolutely nasty and horrible to us.
Did you not even cry when you came third in the final?
No, you can't do that, can you? You've got to look utterly delighted that the other person won.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Yeah, in fact, but you know what the finals are like, Dad. Oh no,
there
sorry,
it is.
I was there.
There it is. Poor Ruby. Well, I just think, bless us, the first time you've all met properly to bake, you see what other people are baking, and then we've already spoken about, you know, using other knives, you know, how do you use this new set of knives, and if everything is different and something doesn't work when it worked at home, I think I would be like Ruby. I'd just be like, oh God, I'm a failure, when you just like, all the pressure in the tent. So we'll go easy on her.
We're going easy on Ruby. But I just thought she only really had one thing wrong, which was that her creme pat split. Like, I mean, no shade to your season, Howard, but like quite a few people had things go wrong. So I didn't think she was right at the bottom.
Absolutely true. But the problem, and you'll know this, the problem is that quite often you're concentrating so much on your own bake. And if the tent is absolutely full like it was, you don't know what's happening at the other side. And so anything that goes wrong with your bake gets magnified because you think that you are the only one that is having problems. And it's only afterwards, when the judging takes place, or even when you actually see the programme, that you realise you weren't alone in things going wrong.
I can't relate, Howard, because I'm not self-centred. I really focus on other people.
Well, talking of bake-off moments, we also had a bake-off moment with Mark, whose oven had not preheated to the correct temperature. This is something we see quite a lot.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
What does that mean? He didn't turn it on. That's what happened.
Well, this is something we see quite a lot in Bake Off. So, Howard, did they give you instructions on how to use these ovens, or did they just expect you to know? Because, Dan, when you and me did an event in London a few months ago, you told me to turn the ovens on, didn't realise that I had to turn the switch quite a different way, you know, because my oven, you just turn it on. So we went to the ovens and they're all cold. Yeah. And Dan's like, Sarah, you had one job. So it does happen.
But I can only speak for my season, obviously, but the food team went through the instructions of the oven very carefully and were like, make sure they're on before we even start filming. Like, you know.
Howard, did they say that to you?
I think we had two things. We had somebody who came in to explain how the ovens and hobs worked. And I remember at the time being so absorbed by the fact that I was in the bake-off tent that I didn't hear anything that they were saying. And then afterwards, I kept asking the food, one of the home economists, and she would say, Howard, you have been told how this works. And I'd be
like, oh. It's like being told off at school.
Yes!
Oh, bless. Well, we didn't have too many bake-off moments in this first challenge, but we did have some really, really lovely flavours. We've had rose and pistachio, grapefruit, strawberry, vanilla, pineapple, lots of passion fruit, coconut, blood orange, lemon and poppy seed, lots of lovely flavours in there. Some really classic bakes to start everything off. Jane, which sandwich cake really stood out to you as your favourite?
Well, actually, I must say Howard's, and that's not just because Howard's here. I love coconut, and I can't remember which of the judges said it had a lovely rise on it. It looked delicious, Howard. I must admit, I didn't fancy the grapefruit because I'm not a grapefruit fan, but it might have been great. Too much rose water for me. I'm not a huge rose water. Lucy's cardamom and rhubarb sounded delicious. I hadn't realised that she put tulip petals on. Yeah, in the judging, they said something about, oh, I love the tulip petals. I didn't know you could eat tulip petals. I keep meaning to look it up, actually, to see whether, because as a gardener, I'm very conscious of things you can and can't eat in the garden, and I'm not sure I'd munch on a tulip petal. I meant to go back and watch that lemon and poppy seed, absolutely classic. I didn't feel as though we got enough description on what the bakes were. I mean, I think Deborah's at the end, when she came up for judging, she did pineapple and coconut, which, again, is a lovely combination. And Mary said it needed a bit more pineapple, and then she was gone. I mean, yeah. That's all we saw of her cake, really. So it's quite hard to comment.
Good pineapple cake. I can taste the pineapple. Good. I'm glad.
Oh, it's gone. And that's all we saw of Deborah's pineapple cake. Maybe in those days you could spot who was not going to go out early on, because you don't get much of a focus on them. You know, we had a lot of focus on Toby and all his, what he was putting in and what was going wrong and what wasn't. And then there were some people you didn't really see at, I mean, Kimberly, again, you didn't really see much of hers. It just sort of came in and went out again. So interesting editing in those days.
It's more just the tops and the bottoms that are shown, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. I think, yeah.
Well, it's like Howard's melted filling. You know, we didn't get to hear the story of the melted filling. He just said, oh, it melted. And we were like, why?
Although, obviously, it was recorded. I think in this episode, there was no initial kind of trip round the benches to say, what are you baking today? Mm. Or anything like that. Was there? It was very, very... It's because we got that segment on the courting cake, I think.
Ah, the courting cake. Yes, let's talk a little bit about this. This is something that was in the BBC episodes or in the first seven series. For those of you in the USA, whatever, there was Mary Berry and Sue and Mel. Yeah, I was quite surprised we had time for a little history segment. I know they're not always popular. I enjoy them, but only when we have to fill a bit more space when we have fewer bakers. I don't think now the first episode is the right time. It's like I would rather have heard about other people's bakes.
I agree. I mean, it's hard enough when there are 12 bakers, but when there are 13, there was no time for anyone. We got to meet a couple of, was it just one or two people they did a little home backstory for? You know, it wasn't everybody, certainly. So, yeah, but the courting cake was interesting. It's sort of it must be the English version of a Gâteau Saint Honoré, where you show off all your baking skills, which are shortbread and cake, and whether or not you can whip cream to the correct consistency.
which they didn't manage, I don't think.
It was so grainy, wasn't it? It looked awful. I like the idea of the simpler times of, was it, they're promenading and talking about all the sort of old old tradition.
Yeah, well, you could grab people on.
I'm like, when I was a teenager, people walked around and hit on each other too. Like, it's not gone anywhere.
Sounded a bit more like sexual harassment in the street.
Yeah.
And then the cake afterwards. Yeah. But, well, yes. Yeah.
But you get a cake. So swings and roundabouts. Oh, no, it's the boys who get the cake, isn't it?
Oh, even worse, misogyny, and then you've got to give someone
the
a cake.
The worst.
I am not down for this.
The girls have got the wrong end of the stick there, haven't they? That's not worked out well for them.
Lovely. So the signature challenge going pretty well for most people, even with Ruby's wobble, shall we say. She made a good sponge with her rhubarb and custard inspired cake, so I think it was a reasonably good signature challenge to start off with, cut thumbs notwithstanding. So now we move on to the technical challenge. Now, Jane, the technical angel food cake. This is probably a good moment to talk about something else we're going to be bringing you guys, as well as our podcast. We are going to be doing our Bake Along series again, obviously, with the series 4 bakes. And what better way to start off than with a lovely technical challenge of the angel food cake. So angel food cake with Jane, our very first series 4 Bake Along. And you guys can come to that class on Sunday the 5th of March, and we will be doing one bake every week as we did in our previous Bake Along sessions, so we hope to see you there. Now, Jane, this is something you're going to be tackling for us. So as someone who has worked through a recipe and has a beautifully perfected recipe for us to all try, what are the things we need to look out for in an angel food cake?
Well, it needs to be light and airy and almost melt in the mouth. You don't want a cake to melt in the mouth because you want to enjoy the eating of it, but it needs to be light and airy. It's basically a meringue with flour shoved in to make it cake-like, but there are loads of things that can go wrong. I've tried lots of recipes. I've now come up with, I think, a really good one. It went down very well with my friends that I gave it away to at the weekend. So the recipe I've come up with, I think we all realise that you shouldn't grease the tin because it sort of clutches onto the side of the tin as it rises up, and then you do have to run a knife around to release it. But one, there's a tin that everybody needs to buy, which is quite expensive, isn't it? You know, I don't know what you go and pay for an angel food tin, 15, 16 quid.
£300.
Please, everybody, Dan lives very close to Harrods, so please. So prices from Dan really are not relevant to those of us normal mortals. So we are going to be doing it not with 12 eggs. We are going to be doing it with 5 eggs. We are going to be cobbling together our own tin, so you don't have to go out and buy your own tin. We are not going to be saying 12 egg whites and then what do you do with 12 egg yolks. We're going to be using everything that we use for the cake, we're then going to be using for our curd and our topping and things like that. So hopefully it's a much more affordable, dead easy and absolutely delicious angel cake we're going to be doing, and just making it more accessible in a time where things are a bit more calls on our budget at the moment, I think. So this is a budget friendly but equally delicious angel food cake. I think it should be fun. I'm really pleased with it, actually.
I have to say, though, I'd slightly disagree with you, Jane, because I think it
was... Oh, really? That's a surprise.
I know, right? But it's not immediately obvious that you shouldn't grease the tin. I think you're a baker, so you know that. I think that's actually, you know, in a genoise, you might still grease it a little bit, mightn't you? So in the angel food cake, to not grease it, I don't know that everyone would know that.
Oh, but no, I agree. I absolutely agree with you, Dan, which, again, is a phrase I don't use very often. I probably only know that because I watched this series of Bake Off.
One thing I think was a mistake that people didn't realise was that it had to cool upside down, because when you look at that tin, it had the three little feet on it. And, you know, anyone in the right frame of mind would look at that and say, well, why does it have three little feet on it? You know, obviously something is for a purpose. So the people who called that the right way up, I think they were, their heads weren't screwed on quite correctly that day. You called yours upside down, right, Harold?
I did call mine upside down, yeah.
Did it fall out? What happened to yours? It was a bit slopey, wasn't it?
It was a bit slopey. So I had greased the tin, and that was part of the problem. Yeah.
I'd have done the same. Don't feel bad, Howard. Don't feel bad.
Thank you.
So, Howard, the first technical of your season, how did you feel when you were told what it was going to be. Of course, as we know, the technical challenge is a complete mystery. It is a complete surprise. How did you feel?
Do you know, I'd gone through developing recipes that didn't involve the use of a stand mixer. And because I was not confident with a stand mixer, I didn't have one at the time. And so everything I'd put as in my equipment list was always a hand mixer. And of course, the first technical, they make you use a stand mixer. And I thought, oh, gosh. And they've gone to the trouble of buying us all these nice tins. I'm not worthy of this.
All this newfangled equipment.
I am not worthy. If you were to get out your little hand mixer and be like, I'm doing it this way, would somebody be like, no, Howard, stand mixer?
I think they wanted that consistency that everybody was using the same equipment, really. So, yeah.
I'd just like to point out you do not need a stand mixer for my angel food cake.
Good.
So don't rush out and buy one. I didn't use it. It'll be fine.
Obviously, we had some technical issues with greasing the cake. How do we cool it? But we also had some questions as we went through. So do we mix the egg whites to soft or stiff peaks? Do we stir in the flour lightly, or do we sacrifice a bit of the meringue, as I believe Dan likes to say, to the baking gods, to loosen up the flour mixture? What's the best way to incorporate all the ingredients together?
Well, Jane will know. Go on, Jane.
So I whip my egg whites to soft peaks before I add my sugar. And then you have a nice stiff mixture that's going to hold its shape when you fold your flour in. For me, I sift my flour in three goes, because that way you don't get great huge globs of flour bubbles in the middle of your mixture, and you have to be gentle. You do not mix some and sacrifice it to the baking gods like you do in many recipes to soften things up. Because as I think we saw with, was it Ruby, you just get this claggy mess that you then can't fold into your egg whites, and then she had to start again. That really, really doesn't work for this. So gentleness is the order of the day, so you don't bash all the air out of your lovely egg whites. And I think of Dan when I do that, because I always think of macarons. No, I think of macarons, and you do have to keep moving it and get it to the right sort of slump, don't you? Perhaps it's the slumping that reminds me of you, Dan, I don't know.
I know I've gone a bit of weight over Christmas, but that's just rude.
It's turning into like a family therapy session.
It always has been, Sarah.
Oh dear, we love each other, really.
I love you very much, Jane. And my instincts would have been exactly the same as yours, so I'm sure your recipe will be wonderful.
Well, it went down well, and there was an American at the table who ate it. Ooh. And she went back for second and third helpings. So hopefully I have got it right. But yes, gentleness, and fold it in three separate goes, just to make sure you have a nice even spread of your flour and you don't have to beat the living daylights out of it to get the flour out of the way, which will make it tougher and deflate it. So, yeah, gentleness.
You've heard it here first, guys. Now, Howard, we've mentioned you were on your sort of little special bench at the front. Did that make it a bit more intimidating during the technical challenge? Because there was nobody even to the right or left of you to sort of spy on to check you were doing it right. Because you were just sort of isolated from everybody behind you. Did that make it harder?
It did. I can't remember the exact wording of the recipe, but it said something like top with whipped cream. And I literally did what I think Ruby did with hers, which was just put whipped cream on the top, and took a breather and turned around and realised that everybody had covered the sides of their cake as well. So I'm whacking it on in the last few seconds. So that's why it had a slightly rough finish. But yes, if I'd been further back in the tent, I would have been able to observe what everybody else was doing, but had to wait until I had a chance to turn round, really.
Were you told you shouldn't turn round? We were told you're not supposed to look at other people, you're not supposed to turn round, and you're not supposed to sort out each other's problems. You were on your own.
We might have been told that, along with how to use the ovens, but I don't think I was listening.
Howard wasn't paying attention.
I don't know. I think the technicals used to matter back in the earlier seasons, didn't they?
Do you not think they do now?
No. I don't think they pay any attention to the technicals. Aww. I think it's... I really don't. I think the technical could swing it in the olden days. I don't feel like the technical can swing it anymore. Should we go into rankings quickly? Because I thought that was interesting. Howard, how did you do?
I came sort of midway, didn't I? About six, yeah.
So were you happy with that?
I was shocked. Because again, I was so shocked. I thought they've forgotten to call me out. I expected to be much further down.
Yeah.
With my sloping sides. But apparently I'd got an ice curd and that didn't... I mean, nobody... There wasn't enough time to talk about anybody's in detail, was there?
No, they just sort of ranked them, yeah. Didn't they?
I believe the only big comments... we've spoken about it, haven't we? We've spoken about greasing the tin, so that's why the cake might have collapsed and been not quite as big. We've spoken about not cooling it upside down. So those things we've pretty much covered. I think the only thing we haven't covered is poor Toby making a salty cake.
Oh, yeah.
And you really don't see Paul Hollywood spitting cake out of his mouth quite so vehemently on television.
How does one make that mistake? I don't know.
Oh, I think at one point, I can't remember what challenge it was, I put the salt in instead of, can't remember what it was, bicarb or baking powder. I did realise before it was too late and remade it. But it's a lesson, isn't it? Always taste your mixture before it goes into the tin, because you can then tell whether you've forgotten to put the sugar in, forgotten to put the salt in, put the salt in instead of the sugar. And it happens more often than you think, because you're busy being distracted by something else and go, oh, yeah, God, I forgot to put the yeast in my bread, which I do on a regular basis.
I have a really good tactic for making sure that I don't put the wrong things in my cake, and that's that I have eyes and I look at things.
Oh, shut up.
Like, I just thought it was quite a mistake to make, and it was also a tiny little pinch pot.
Daniel,
the salt was in a tiny little pinch pot. Like, the sugar surely would be in a big jar. I just thought it was just a very random mistake to make. I never salted my cakes.
No, but you forget to put gelatin in your creme pat, and I have to remind you.
Listen, you. We don't want your input here, Sarah.
Yeah. So if everybody wants to start making a list of every time Dan makes a mistake in a class...
That's not on television. That doesn't count.
No, I'm joking. It's live to people.
And you still have eyes. You still have eyes, Dan.
Yeah.
This is perfect.
Don't use my own words against me.
Toby obviously coming last in that challenge, bless him, with his salty cake. Howard coming a very respectable sixth, very good indeed. And first, we have lovely Rob, who's had a very, very good challenge with his pecan and apple cake, and now coming first in the technical challenge. So yes, let's move on to our Showstopper Challenge. Going into the Showstopper Challenge, I believe it was Rob that was in very good position, Christine was in a good position as well, and maybe Toby and Ruby down the bottom there. But yes, our Showstopper chocolate cake. Now, Howard, we can't go any further in this without talking about your gorgeous, gorgeous, as we've mentioned, artistic skills with that beautiful polar bear, which also got very high praise from the judges as well. I believe Mary called it a masterpiece, which it really was. It was beautiful. It's really, really gorgeous. What was your inspiration for that cake?
It's funny how everybody calls it a polar bear. I don't know what a polar bear is doing in the Black Forest. But
I think it's global warming.
So it was supposed to be a sort of... It was a little bear, and I'd made him kind of silvery because I wanted a kind of silver-grey bear with bright blue eyes.
But presumably this was just an elaborate ruse to flirt with Mr. Hollywood, because I think the only thing more impressive than your moulding skills were your flirting skills. What was that about, Howard? Where's your dignity?
This is coming from Dan.
No, I think it was... I know we're not supposed to talk about the audition process and things like that, but I think right from the start, someone had asked me what was my reason for going into the tent, and I jokingly, partly jokingly, said Paul Hollywood. And from then on, I think it was therefore on my record.
This guy fancies Paul.
Yeah. So they would tease me about, I think there's a later episode where they say, Have you had any Bake Off dreams? Have you been dreaming about any of the judges?
Oh, God.
Not those kind of dreams. Well, Paul, I'm going to call him Paul the polar bear. I appreciate he wasn't a polar bear. Maybe it was just the lighting in the tent. He did look very, very pale. But it was beautiful, beautiful skills there. So what's the most important thing to consider in a chocolate cake? Because we had some disappointing comments over the challenge, a dry cake, not a lot of flavour coming through. What do we need to think about when we're making a chocolate cake?
Making a chocolate cake is actually not the easiest thing in the world. You know, a lot of people think that you can just use like a Victoria sponge and just put cocoa powder in it. That doesn't really work. You just sort of end up with a very dry cake. It's not sort of unctuous and moist. A lot of the time you have to use melted chocolate or get a lot of moisture in there by adding water and sort of lots of eggs and stuff. So it's actually not that simple. You can't just put a bit of cocoa powder in it. And there's a great variation in between things that are sort of light and cakey and things that are sort of dense and moist and indulgent. So it's not as easy as on paper, it sounds super easy, but in reality, there's a big variation you can have in making a chocolate cake. I thought there were some very interesting ones. I think Howard probably would have seen a lot more of it than I would have done, but I was intrigued by Francis's and whether or not that was chocolatey enough. What would you say about that, Howard? It didn't scream chocolate cake to me.
No.
It was beautiful, but it didn't scream chocolate cake.
Yeah, I think she'd done like a certainly there were different flavours in the different cakes. And some of them looked lighter than others, but she'd concentrated her chocolate, I think. She'd done like a sort of chocolate ganache type nutty squirrel in the centre, hadn't she, of one of them. So there was chocolate in that.
Yeah, but if someone said, I've made you a chocolate cake and you cut into that, you'd be like, where's the chocolate, love? But what was the brief for the decoration? They said two types of chocolate decoration. What was it?
Yeah, so they were suggesting, I think at the time they suggested you could use something like, show two different skills with chocolate. So I chose to do tempering the trees and using modelling chocolate for the bear.
I have to ask about the modelling chocolate. I just remembered I have to ask you about that because I wanted to use modelling chocolate and they said to me, I wanted to just use modelling chocolate and they said, can you make it in the tent? And I said, well, no, because if you make it, you have to rest it for like 24 hours so that it rehardens. And so they said, well, no, you can't use modelling chocolate. So were you just allowed... Yeah, were you just allowed to use it?
Yes, we were permitted. So they'd allowed us on this one. It was showing a different skill.
Oh, right, okay.
So they said, yes, you can use modelling chocolate, but you've got to do something else. So that's why I did the tempering as well.
So that's the skill is the moulding. So I just wanted to roll it out to cover something.
Oh, right.
They wouldn't let me use it. Because I think that's like their equivalent of like buying shop-bought fondant as buying ready-made moulding chocolate.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. But I was just, that struck me straight away. I was like, oh, how come he's allowed to do that? I thought your moulding was impressive. I sort of forgot you were quite artistic, Howard.
No. But I was so frustrated because I'd done what I thought was such a beautiful bear in practice, and then trying to mould it with one thumb bandaged up. It was so like, it looks so clunky, you know, but it was okay.
I thought yours looked lovely. I really did.
I did too. And yeah. You're the only one that did a rectangular cake as well. I thought it sounded delicious, Howard.
One piece of chocolate work that was very impressive to me was the chocolate straws. The guy, yeah. Was it Robert who made the chocolate straws? Yeah.
Oh, Rob's chocolate straws. Beautiful.
That's a real skill. That's hard to do. Seriously, that's so difficult. Like, I struggle with that.
Good God.
But I did
it here first, folks.
I know, right? But I did wonder, I didn't think the rest of his cake was that impressive, but the chocolate straws kind of like, he had the little baskets and the straws. So I thought his chocolate work covered the brief really nicely of having the different types of decoration. But his cake didn't blow me away. Was it very impressive to you on the day, Howard?
I think it was. And I think, you know, some people, I think, had struggled a little bit, had got very ambitious and not then been able to deliver what they were wanting to deliver. And you could definitely see that Rob had perfected everything he was wanting to do. So I think that was most impressive. Some people had great ideas, like Ali, bless him, with his little chocolate butterflies, and then only ended up with one to put on top, didn't he? So.
And then he put passion fruit seeds in his cake for some reason.
Oh, yes, what that's not that? Great, is
I'm
it?
Like, that's just one of those choices where you're like, dude, how did you ever think that was going to work? Like, what did you think was going to be nice about that?
I've got a few passion fruit seeds in my passion fruit cake, but yeah, I suppose in a chocolate cake, you can't see them, can you?
Oh, just I just think I find them unpleasant in a regular passion fruit.
I do too, actually. I think there's more seed than passion fruit, and yeah. I just like to sip
them. I like
them
the flavour, but yeah.
Well, some other cakes that the judges seem to really like, despite Ruby's slightly rocky start and maybe not the most impressive decoration, she had a lovely chocolate and ginger cake. I believe Rob's cake actually tasted really good, as well as having impressive chocolate skills.
Oh, Christine's hat. I liked Christine's hat. What did you think of that, Jane?
Oh, I liked the hat. I think the shame of the editing in this episode was that we only really saw the hat when it came up to the judging table. You know, because I write notes as I go along and I stop the recording and I just go, you know, look at those lovely pictures that are drawn of them. And then I found this episode, I had lots of blanks. I thought, well, have I missed Christine's cake? And then suddenly it's up on the table. And it was lovely cake, wasn't it? And I'm assuming she made those flowers out of modelling chocolate because she has some lovely roses around it. And the wonderful shine of the crown part of the hat, I thought was lovely, but we didn't really hear much about it. Looks exciting, lovely shine is all I've written down from the judges. I think they've improved their editing from then to now to be more informative.
Similarly, Becca's, which was the chocolate cherry one that had truffles on it, it got really good feedback, but I don't think we saw anything of it until the judging table.
I loved Mel's comment about the tiny temper, which
yes!
completely, completely yeah. missed. Yeah.
Oh. Oh, I miss Mel and Sue so much. Oh, they were just so
and
funny.
And Mel's little face after she made the joke. And all looking to camera. She was so pleased with herself.
Utterly, utterly adorable. Another skill a lot of people did in the tent, which must have been really tricky to do at all, let alone in the first week on Bake Off, is tempering chocolate. That is something that we've taught in a few classes, we've touched on, and it's technical, it's complicated, it's time consuming. So yeah, what do we think about so many tempering attempts? In week one.
Well, I mean, it's a tricky thing to do, isn't it? And if you haven't got a decent quality chocolate, especially with white chocolate, which is basically the cheap stuff's really difficult to work with, it's difficult and it's a definite skill. I think it was a real mix this whole episode, wasn't it? There was some simple, yeah, chocolate cake, not as simple as on first appearances, but you've had a sandwich cake and you've had a chocolate cake. Gosh, I would love to have done that. And it seems very simple compared to the challenges the new people have. But and then they go and chuck in chocolate tempering. So I think there's a real mixture of skills, which was nice to see. But tempering is a tricky one. And you really need to keep an eye on it.
The fortunate thing with tempering is I suppose it's technically true of everything, but either it works or it doesn't. Like if you make a cake and it's not perfect, you can kind of cover it up and put a bit of buttercream around it. But if your chocolate tempering doesn't work, it just doesn't work. Like, there's nothing to be done. You just have to either start again or give up. So, it's an impressive skill to take on, and I think it shows people's level-headedness, because if you rush it, it won't work. You know, you have to be patient and you have to double-check what you're doing. So, well done to everyone who got that right, and commiserations to everyone who got it wrong, because it's a very, very easy thing to mess up.
Can I just ask what people thought of Mark? Was it Mark's profiteroles? When they came out of the oven, they looked as though they'd all slumped to me, his profiteroles. I expected him to get one of those really cutting comments from Paul saying, if you're going to put something on, make sure it's good, because they didn't look like great profiteroles.
They didn't mention that. I question, every time somebody goes up sort of a bit above and beyond the brief, I do wonder why. Like, they didn't ask you to make choux pastry. Why would you do that?
For the showstopper dance.
All right.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. I think we've all made bad judgments in the tent, haven't we?
Yeah. But I'm just like, why?
I applaud his bravery in that cake. I mean, not only have we got profiteroles, which obviously is the choux pastry on top of making a cake, but that collar that sort of opened up and gave way for the profiteroles to fall down. I think he made a very good attempt at something that looks incredibly difficult, especially in week one. So brave, very brave.
I also want to disagree with Paul Hollywood, which again is very unusual for us on this programme, isn't it? Is he said, oh, you used milk chocolate for your collar. You never get a good finish with milk chocolate.
Lies, yeah.
Well, you pick up a decent box of chocolates anywhere and they've got beautifully tempered milk chocolates as a variety. It's rubbish. I mean, something hadn't gone quite right because it was quite cloudy. He probably got his temperatures wrong, but you can get a perfectly good effect with milk chocolate.
Yeah, it's definitely easier with dark chocolate, but it's not. You can still do it with milk, yeah.
Yeah, and you can temper white. You know, you just have to have decent chocolate with a good cocoa butter content, really.
Yeah, I don't know what he was talking about, Jane. It's almost like he hasn't got a clue, isn't it?
They should have us. They really should.
They should.
I mean, we know
so
everything.
Much better. Yeah. I mean, the contestants would never get a chance to talk, but we'd have
one. I think there was one comment, but there were some strange comments I thought watching it back. There's one bit about that you can't bake cakes on different levels in the oven. It's like, yeah, you can. Of course you can.
I must say, when they said that, I sort of questioned my entire belief system. I was like, well, really?
Isn't that the whole point of a fan oven?
Yes.
I mean, well, you do get a slightly different bake, but with the fan ovens, you just move the shelves around if they're baking unevenly. You know, it's just, yeah. Yeah.
Bit of nonsense. I have to say, though, like, I don't know if it's just my rubbish oven, but if I bake two cakes on the same shelf, they're still slightly different. The one nearer the fan is darker, you know. So it just, I don't think, I think you're talking rubbish. Talking rubbish.
Rubbish. Rubbish.
Something else I'd just really like to say that I didn't actually get to mention at the beginning. The very beginning of the signature challenge, Mary says, we're looking for sandwich cakes. I don't just want a Victoria sandwich with strawberry jam and cream. This is what Glenn makes. Absolutely fine. This is not a knock at Glenn. He puts those gorgeous big strawberries in it. And Mary says, I would have taken out the strawberries.
Jam and cream.
Would have left her with a Victoria sandwich, strawberry jam and cream.
Mary doesn't know what she wants.
What you want, Mary?
She
what you
know
want?
What she wants.
Obviously, as we all know, this is not a secret or a surprise, as we've all hopefully seen this season. If you've not seen season 4 and this is your first experience of it, then I feel sorry for you. I really do. So our first star baker of this season is Robert, who had a lovely pecan and apple cake, which I'm not sure we actually saw too much of, but did very well in his technical and wowed with his beautiful stripy chocolate cigars. And of course, that means we do have to send somebody home. And for the first week, it was poor Toby. His chocolate cake failed to impress and he had a very salty technical. So I think not really a surprise there. Poor Toby.
Not a surprise that Toby went home, but I do think that actually Howard should have won.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's really weird because, you know, I had no idea that I was in the running for Star Baker that week, and it was shocking to actually watch the edit and to see, oh gosh, this was the closest I ever came. Never got quite.
I thought,
oh, you peaked in week one, Howard. You peaked.
You were middle of the pack in the technical, but I thought your showstopper showed a greater variety and interest in terms of chocolate skills. So I would.
Oh, thank you.
Considering how things generally appear to my perception to be weighted more on the showstopper, I would have thought you would have been very much in the running for that. So not biased at all, Howard. But yeah, get in the bin, Robert. But let's have Howard win it, shall we?
Hashtag Howard was robbed. Howard was robbed by Rob.
Yay!
Yes!
Hunting for the win.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I just wanted to say something about Mary. She softened a lot, I think, over the series.
Is there something about Mary?
Something about Mary. She looked very much sterner than I remembered her looking. And she was going, there's definitely enough time with 4 hours. And I thought, oh, Mary, I'd like to see you bake one of these with two different types of chocolate skills and get it chilled in a tent for 4 hours. I thought she was harsh. Do you think over the series she then softened so it was more good cop, bad cop? Because I remember her just being very supportive. She found something nice to say every time when I was in the tent, but it seemed as though they were much firmer. Both of them, I thought there was less joking about and much more seriousness.
I think Paul has definitely gone more bad cop, but in more of a jokey, lighthearted way. Like, you know, he's sort of mean, but in a not unkind way. Do you know what I mean? Just sort of harsh. And I think maybe Mary swung the other way. But yeah, it was. She did have a bit of a sour puss, didn't she? And originally, when she said 4 hours, I was like, yeah, 4 hours is ages. But I think, from memory, we had 4 hours to do our chocolate collar cakes, and we still were all down to the wire on it. But then that has had to be two tiers, at least two tiers, and both of the chocolate collar. So, yeah, maybe they could have done more in four hours. I don't know.
I mean, I think she was right. I thought 4 hours was enough. It's just she was quite stern instead of the soft, fluffy, cuddly Mary that we all know and love.
Yeah, I could have used her in a more floral jacket. I think it would have been better.
I have to say, I thought we all looked a bit rough. Do you know, nowadays, people put far more makeup on, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
We were all a bit...
Well, Dan does.
I do now. I didn't on makeup. On makeup, I thought I was quite handsome until I saw myself on television. It was quite the shock, I can tell you. But yeah, no, I did notice, like, most of the women on my season were quite dolled up, you know, relatively speaking. And I did notice that people barely had mascara on in the tent. It was a simpler time.
Very lovely time, though.
I'm
enjoying looking at this old series. It's very nostalgic, but I think there's a real feel-good factor about it. You don't feel as though you're on the edge of your seat biting your nails or going, oh my goodness, I'm never going to attempt that. Yeah. I think we can all attempt all of those challenges. It makes it very accessible to the viewers. I liked it a lot.
A lot less anxiety.
Yeah, I think so.
It might not have had quite the detail we've come to expect of later seasons, but it definitely was softer and calmer and, I don't mean more enjoyable, but more relaxing in that aspect. So, yes.
One thing that I do think is wrong about the nostalgia that people have, though, is people often level the criticism. They say, oh, in the olden days, they used to be more focused on the baking. And I'm like, I don't think that's true.
No. I don't think so either.
Yeah, it's a surprise, yeah. I think I would have been one of the first people to say that. And I watched this episode back and went,
yeah, they didn't talk more about the baking. It was, you know. So, yeah, that's an interesting perception switch that some of us have.
Well, there we go. That is episode one. That is Cake Week done and dusted. We are very much looking forward to bringing you guys the rest of this season. As we like to do with all our podcasts, please do let us know if you have any questions you would like to ask any of our lovely bakers, and we shall answer them on the podcast. You can contact us via social media. We are at Bake With A Legend, or you can email us thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. So thank you very much, Dan, Jane, and Howard. We have done Cake Week. We will be moving on to Bread next week, Paul Hollywood's most favourite week. So we will see you all next week. Thank you so much, everybody. See you soon. Bye bye.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.